Chapter 7.
It was late afternoon when Charles arrived at the rendezvous point.
"We found her,"
Kaylin called as she saw their beloved server approaching. Charles ran the rest of the way and gave Abigail a long embrace without any sign that he even noticed her deformities. When they had debriefed him on all that had happened, Charles put his arm around Abigail again. "We'll get you out of here. Don't lose hope." Abigail closed her eyes and laid her head on his shoulder.
"You're tired," Kaylin said. "Why don't you get some sleep? We'll keep watch through the night."
As Abigail slept, the others sat around a fire and discussed their next steps.
"Why isn't this working?" Kaylin asked. "The sword is from the cottage. It should give her power."
Charles' grandfatherly smile eased her anxiety. He always knew what to do. He pointed to the woodpile by the fire.
"Leith, hand me that stick. The one shaped like a club. Yes, that one."
Leith tossed it across the fire and Charles stood to catch it. He approached the large maple, took aim, and swung the heavy club with both hands at a branch. The branch shook slightly as the club bounced back toward Charles. He looked at Kaylin.
"Healthy tree, right?"
Then he turned to another maple and repeated the assault on a like-sized branch. This time, the branch snapped off, barely slowing the club's motion. Charles tossed the club back to Leith and faced Kaylin.
"Why did the second one break?"
"Because that tree is dead," she said.
"Not quite," he replied, pointing to a section of the branches that still had green leaves.
He backed up a step to take in the entire tree, arms folded.
"Traces of life in spots," he said. "But you're right. It's clearly on its way out."
He stripped a handful of leaves from the first tree and returned to the dying tree.
"It just needs some green, right?"
He placed them on the branch and watched as they slid off and fell to the ground. Kaylin chuckled.
"I don't think that's how it works, Charles."
Charles feigned a look of surprise.
"You're saying I can't fix the problem with external changes?"
Watson approached the tree and ran a hand down the trunk. He peeled off a section of bark.
"It is diseased. To discover the cause would require felling the thing and examining its rings." He pointed to the ground. "The roots as well."
"Something's wrong in Abigail's heart," Leith said. "That what you're saying, Bax?"
"Ah, yes. Of course," said Watson. "We endeavored to alter the direction of Abigail's feet, but the feet cannot traverse long in a direction opposite that of the heart."
"Makes sense," Kaylin said. "But then how do we help her? How do we diagnose what's wrong in her heart?"
"The heart is a world of complexity," Charles said. "We would need to ask her what inclinations led her to make the decision she made. What were her motives? What feelings led to her being vulnerable? What thought patterns produced those feelings? What perspectives did she have that led to evil reactions? What attitudes or desires caused her to look at things from those perspectives, and what caused those attitudes? What is her heart in love with that it should hate, or apathetic about that it should love? What is she hoping in? What is she trusting in? What wrong beliefs underlie all this? And what..."
"I get the idea," Kaylin said. "But figuring all that out will take forever. What about in the meantime? Isn't there something we could do now?"
"There is. To sort all that out, she's going to need some breathing room. Right now, she's assaulted with constant temptations from every direction. We need to clear a perimeter so she can have a break from the onslaught of temptation."
Work began early the next morning. It wasn't long before a small crowd of lowlanders gathered to see this strange group of children and their little axes. The people shook their heads as the kids felled one tree after another and tore grapevines and berry bushes out by the roots. With her deformities, Abigail couldn't swing an axe. But Charles put her to work clearing small twigs, which, for her, proved hard work.
Temptation is strongest in times of idleness and boredom, he explained. An evil desire grows in the garden of leisure. Keeping busy with good work will leave little time to wander into the enemy's traps. The effort seemed to be working. With each passing day, Abigail ate less fruit.
Anzu fumed.
Shouldn't we be doing something? We're losing her!
The prince, who only had one eyebrow, raised it. Anzu knew the prince was not accustomed to being second-guessed. If a consequence followed, so be it. But something needed to be said. All his hard work was being squandered. Fury rose within Anzu as the prince belittled him with a condescending look, like a person deciding whether a fly was worth swatting. Finally, the prince looked away with a scoff.
You think we're losing her because you're an even greater fool than she is. You don't understand what keeps her in bondage.
The prince clenched his fists.
My grip on her is stronger now than it has ever been. The false hope she is gaining from her reduced indulgence only doubles the strength of her chains.
He turned and pointed to Abigail.
Look for yourself. Not at her hands or feet, but at her heart.
Heavy irons bound her entire inner being. Will, motives, affections, attitudes, all of it.
I'm not worried about her. She's mine. The only question now is how many of her friends I can take down. I need them out of the way for the next stage of my plan.
Guardians lined the halls of the cottage, from the foyer to the throne room. All were heavily armed, expressionless and silent. Only the echoing steps of the unwelcome visitor interrupted the quiet. Each guardian closed in behind him as he passed, blocking his retreat. That suited the Prince of Darkness just fine. The father had granted his request for an audience, and no intimidation by the guardians would deter him. The prince entered the throne room with his head bowed, knowing that a glimpse in the wrong direction would be his last. He grimaced with hatred as he dropped involuntarily to his knees before the throne. The chief guardian stepped from the father's side.
Your request, he thundered.
It was not a question. The father's normally loving eyes burned white with judgment.
You have not permitted me to touch Abigail,
the prince began.
But she willingly came to me. She has forgotten you. You mean so little to her that a single grape has a greater tug on her heart than your son's table. Her repentance is half-hearted. And by your own word, the ruler's sacrifice can't apply to her because she no longer shows any sign of faith. My request is simple. It is time to conclude the process.
His next words came out as a growl meant to send shivers down the spines of the guardians.
Allow me to devour her.
Many of the guardians were visibly shaken. It wasn't that long ago the prince had knelt in this very spot, requesting the same thing for Alexander. The gasps among the guardians were audible that day when the chief guardian delivered the father's answer.
Permission granted.
Would he now give Abigail over as well? Abigail steadied herself.
What was that?
There it was again. The ground moved.
Hey, I think I felt a little
crack. A huge limb above them broke off. The same instant, Abigail tumbled to the side, shoved by Laith, who took the force of the falling branch. The limb flayed his leg open. The ground convulsed.
trees crashed down all around them. Even at this distance, Abigail heard the rumble of buildings collapsing in the city. Lowlanders scattered like frenzied ants seeking safety, but there was nowhere to hide. Shouts arose. It's the judgment! The ruler has come! Abigail wanted to scream.
No, I'm not ready.
Cries rang out from every direction as people were crushed by falling trees or swallowed alive by the earth as massive fissures cracked open. The injured screamed in pain and cursed the ruler. There was no escape, no refuge, nowhere to run. When the shaking ended, Abigail surveyed the devastation.
Laith! Kaelin! Watson!
Where are they? A woman shouted.
She's one of them!
Abigail turned to find a group of enraged lowlanders approaching.
You brought this upon us! This happened because you mountain people and all your hateful speech about the orchard!
A man shouted.
Here's a message for your ruler!
And shoved Abigail to the ground. That ignited the crowd. They closed around her and beat her mercilessly. She curled into a ball with her arms protecting her face, but the kicks and punches landed all over her body. Two men dragged her around by her hair.
Please,
A kick to her ribs took her breath away. Then another blow to her face. Then the beating stopped. She still heard shouting, but dared not uncover her face.
Abigail, run!
It's Watson!
She looked up. Watson had pulled two of the men away from her onto their backs, and the crowd turned on him.
Run!
He shouted again. She stood on rubber legs and stumbled forward. The world spun. Screaming agony met her every step, but she didn't care. She had to escape. In a few short moments, shouts closed in behind her, the angry crowd gaining quickly. Her disfigured and battered body couldn't obey the commands from her mind. It was like running in a dream, slogging through molasses. She stumbled, kept her feet, tripped again, and fell. Her head pounded. Her vision blurred. She struggled back to her feet and pushed her body to new limits. But not even adrenaline could overcome her weakness. They would soon be upon her.
Help me!
She shrieked, desperately scanning the landscape for her friends. Just ahead, she saw a thick grove of trees where she might be able to hide, if she could make it. To her left, a man angled up the hill toward her. She looked again at the trees ahead. Another man emerged from those trees, also running toward her. The man on the hillside called her name.
Abigail, come this way.
Laith!
Before she could take a step toward him, she heard her name again.
This way, Abigail.
She turned and slowed. It was Alexander. Only a moment to decide as the crowd charged. Laith was a powerful man, but his strength lay mostly in spiritual matters. This was a physical fight, and Alexander was twice Laith's height and three times as thick. She ran toward Alexander.
No!
Shouted Laith.
Down here!
But she had already committed. Laith changed his course.
He's headed for the crowd.
A lump formed in her throat as she realized he was going to meet them head on to give her a chance to make the trees. When she reached Alexander, he pointed south.
This way.
He scooped her into his arms and carried her all the way to the southern boundary of the orchard.
There's a place here where you can be safe.
He made his way down a small ridge, arcing around some downed timber. When he reached the bottom, he set her down.
There,
he said, pointing to a cave.
No one knows about this place. Hide in that cave, and you'll be safe.
Abigail crouched to see inside, but it was too dark.
What's in there?
Don't worry. I know it looks scary, but trust me. It's safe. Once you get inside, it opens into a wide space. I'll come back soon with a lamp and supplies.
Abigail crept toward the mouth of the cave. She sat, scooted close to the opening, and extended her leg, waving it side to side to feel what was inside. She stretched downward to feel where she could step. Nothing. She pulled back, turning toward Alexander.
I don't feel any...
His great hands shoved her into the cave, and she plummeted into complete darkness. Her body impacted the angled side, stopping her momentarily. But then she began sliding, scraping along the rocky wall. She groped for a hold, but the incline was too steep. As she picked up speed, she flailed. Finally, her hand met something hard, the other side of the cave. The walls continued to close as she slid downward. The funnel soon became too narrow for her body, and she came to a painful stop, wedged at her hips, legs dangling. She tried pushing against the sides to lift herself, but the smooth walls gave no traction. Judging from the circle of light above, she guessed she had dropped 30 feet. Mustering her remaining strength, she called out,
"Alexander, help me!"
His giant head appeared in the opening.
"Why ask me for help?"
His voice dripped with venom.
"Call for your ruler. You think he's so powerful and loving? See if he saves you."
She looked up in disbelief. Was he so embittered that he would murder her just to strike out at the ruler? She clawed at the sides, but remained hopelessly wedged. She heard a grunt from above. Pebbles trickled down on her. Then a boulder rolled into the opening above. The circle of light went black. The boulder dropped through the opening and rained down more dirt as it plummeted toward her. She pulled her arms over her head as she prepared to be crushed, but the boulder wedged just a few feet above her head, sealing her subterranean tomb. Looking up into the darkness, she heard her own screams die in the sealed chamber. She tried to control her panic, but without success. Thrashing and flailing, she only wedged herself more and more tightly until exhaustion finally stilled her. Her screams turned to sobs. Later, sobs became moans. Finally, drained of life, her body refused to draw another breath. Her eyes fell closed. Her burning lungs screamed for air and forced another effort to snatch one final taste of precious oxygen. But no sooner did the first wisp of air enter than her exhausted chest released it back into the dark void. Each gasp seemed to claim her final wisp of strength. Alexander's words cut deep.
"What would happen if I called to the ruler?"
She had been defying him ever since she came to the lowlands. The great wind had stopped blowing on her long ago. She had made her choice and was now getting exactly what she deserved. In her thoughts of the ruler, she could only imagine him as angry. Yet she desired to see him. Even if she was to be condemned, she wanted another glimpse of his colors. As her life ebbed away, all empty desires, including her desire for life itself, detached from her like rotten apples dropping from a branch. Her whole existence resolved around one central craving: to see the ruler. Out of the dark silence, the mighty wind spoke.
"I gave you a loving family. I gave you greater joy than anyone in the high country. I gave you your beauty and your smile. I gave you life and..."
Her mind filled in the rest. "I gave you all those gifts, and this is the thanks I get? You ignore me and eat fruit?" But that's not what he said. His next words jarred her soul.
"I gave you all that, and if it had been too little, I would have given you even more."
Did she hear that right?
"I would have given you even more?"
"My lord, how can that be? I don't deserve..." "Are you saying you will always keep giving until there's enough to satisfy me?"
"Always. But only if you look to me alone to fill you. The orchard can fill your mouth, but only I can promise to satisfy."
Abigail remembered the plaque above the kitchen doors at the banquet hall. It had been her favorite title for the father, and the longest. He who gives generously to all without finding fault. Then two of the mighty wind's words leapt back into her mind with a jolt. Would have. He would have given her more. Her heart ached with renewed stabs of remorse. How much of the father's life had she forfeited?
All this time I've been starving in misery in the lowlands. I could have been feasting. My joy, my smile, Watson, my friends, all lost. And for what? A stupid grape that makes me sick.
The pain of regret was worse than the pain of death. Then, the ache from her injuries softened, her thoughts clouded, consciousness slipped away. After the earthquake, most of the lowlanders returned to the city. Kaylin ran to where she had last seen Charles. The carnage she had witnessed haunted her. The lifeless, mangled body of an elderly man crushed by a tree had imprinted itself on her memory. The man reminded her of Charles, and the thought of what may have happened to him, she cried out, "Charles!"
"I'm up here!"
Her heart leapt. She scampered up the hill and threw her arms around him.
Are you okay?
They both asked at once.
"I have some bruises," Kaylin said, "but nothing serious. Have you seen the others?"
Charles pointed to the south. "Here comes Laith and Watson now." Kaylin greeted the men with the brightest smile she had mustered in quite a while.
"I'm so glad you're all right."
Neither of the men returned her smile. Kaylin's faded as well.
"What's wrong?"
Her mind raced, finally landing on the one thing she didn't want to consider.
"Is it Abigail? Is she?"
Watson shook his head slowly and closed his eyes.
"She was buried,"
said Laith. Kaylin staggered backward and sat down on a stone, unable to speak, barely able to breathe.
"Why? The ruler knows everything. Why did he even send us here if he knew we would fail?"
It was a war, and wars have casualties. She understood that. Still, the pain knifed her to the core. Paralyzed with grief, none of the friends wanted to begin the long journey home. They agreed they would set up camp, stay the night, and set out for home in the morning.